For 32 years, I worked in the field of law enforcement, a dream of mine since I was a little boy. Of those 3 decades, I worked 15 as a homicide detective. I've seen things you couldn't fathom. The world is truly a messed up place. I have 2 reasons that I didn't completely lose my mind. My wife, Raven, and her son, Hunter. As of a year ago, I thought that I'd escape the darkness. But now I fear that the darkness is invading my own home. My wife and I live in a 2-story house that we built several decades ago. We are a ways away from the bustle of our city, and our closest neighbors, who happen to be Hunter and his family, live about 1 mile down the road. We enjoy living in the relative solitude. I take our German Shepherd, Mr. Morris, on regular walks through the woods and on fishing trips with my Raven and I. Though I will never forget the horrors of humanity, I still felt as though I would finally be at peace with myself and the world. Is that so much for an old man to ask for? I started my day off the same as any other. I had a cup of joe, put on my worn sneakers, and took Mr. Morris on a walk at about 6 in the morning. My wife, a school teacher, had already departed for the day. The sun was peeking out over the horizon, bathing the light layer of snow in orange light. Mr. Morris ran out ahead of me, coming to a stop at the pond that we usually fished at. He promptly began barking, staring out across the waters. "Mr. Morris, quit your belly aching before you wake up your brother." I came to a stop beside him and looked across the black surface. Either my eyes were playing tricks on me, or someone was on the other side of the pond. It was still dark enough that I questioned myself and rubbed my eyes before glancing again at the other bank. Nothing. Mr. Morris continued barking for a few more seconds, but eventually a squirrel caught his attention. I wasn't so easily distracted. I continued to scan the trees across the way, but finally dismissed the subtle movement as that of an animal of some sort. Mr. Morris and I continued our walk without incident. I flipped on the news and sat down with a bacon, egg, and cheese croissant. Mr. Morris, likewise, lapped up the fresh food that I'd placed in his bowl. I took a bite of my croissant and focused on the television set. The newscaster was discussing the disappearance of a local woman, Denise Lawson. I had seen this before. The poor girl had been missing for about 2 weeks now. She was young, about 23 years old, with long, red hair and green eyes. For the 3rd time that week, I found myself remembering one of the darkest parts of my career. The disappearances had begun about a decade ago. 6 girls, aged 21 to 24, had mysteriously disappeared over the span of about 2 years. I'll never forget their names. Patricia Bledsoe, Karen Whittaker, Julia Voss, Jamie Calloway, Nia Justice, and Felicia Smith. They all had 2 things in common: red hair and green eyes. Only the partial remains of 2 of them had ever been found. There had been no forensic evidence and no groundbreaking leads. Someone claimed to have seen a man with one of the girls on the night she disappeared, but that was about as close as we got to ever identifying the sick person who was taking these girls. This case was more than a little personal for me. Patricia Bledsoe was my wife's niece. I'd known her since she was a little girl. I stared down listlessly at my croissant, having suddenly lost my appetite. I put the plate on the end table and got up, headed to my computer, and tried to keep my mind occupied with some online solitaire. A few hours later, I got the call. It was, to my surprise, one of the officers from the station that I had known for a few years. I hadn't heard much from him since I had retired. "Barry?" "Hey, Detective Vincent, this is Barry." He sounded nervous. "I know, son, and you don't have to call me detective anymore. Just Dario. How are you doing, buddy?" Barry hesitated. I'm good. Dario, sir. It's about your wife." I could feel my insides twisting up, like they had when I first heard about Patricia's disappearance. "Where's my wife, Barry?" "Sir, we've brought her in for questioning. She's a suspect for the disappearance of Denise Lawson and Tatiana Graves. I got to the station as fast as I could. When I arrived, I confronted the captain, a man I'd known and collaborated for many years, Eric Lloyd. "Eric, what the hell are you getting at? Bringing my wife here to be handed for something we both full well know she didn't do." Three other officers stepped forward, but Eric subtly waved them off. He was a tall and tired man with a clean-shaven face. He looked me in the eyes before responding. "Look, Dario, you know I have the utmost respect for both you and Raven. You were at my wedding, for Christ's sake. But I have to do my job regardless. Surely you understand that." I was fuming. What could possibly make you think that Raven was involved in any of these incidents? If I had a criminal living under my roof, don't you think I would know? There was a glint in Eric's eyes, and I already knew what he was going to say. "I don't know, Detective. Your son was committing arson while he was still in your house, if I remember correctly." "How dare you bring that up?" Eric sighed. "Look, just wait a few, and your wife will be right out, okay? But heed my warning. Don't interfere with our investigation. With all due respect, you're not with the force anymore, sir." I paced back and forth for almost 10 more minutes, cursing indiscriminately. When Raven finally walked up to me, I didn't even notice her. "Honey? Raven, are you okay?" I took her in my arms and then stood back, examining her closely. She looked great for a woman of 54, her blonde hair falling past the shoulders, her heart-shaped face as full of life as it had been when I first met her all those years ago. "Yeah, old man, I'm fine. Let's go home. I want to see Gabriel." I could feel the eyes of the other officers on me as I guided my wife out of the station. We decided that she could pick her car up from school when I dropped her off the next day. Then, of course, the conversation immediately turned to why she had been brought to the station in the first place. Eric picked me up because, well, it hurts to say this, but apparently I was one of the last people seen with Tatiana Graves before she went missing. "Who is she? You've never told me about any friends with that name." Raven sighed and looked out of the passenger window. "Tatiana was a former student of mine. She graduated a few years ago, but when I had drinks with Mariam a few nights ago, we happened to run into her. We had a good old time. Nothing seemed to be bothering her." "Eric's always been trigger happy," I muttered through gritted teeth. "When I see him in town again, I'll be sure to give him a piece of my—" "No, Dario, it's fine. Eric is just doing his job. He and the other officers were very polite during the interview. They don't mean us any harm." I was still aggravated about the whole situation, but I was happy to see that my wife was okay. I pulled up to our son's house, and we were greeted at the door by his wife, Ellie, and their three-year-old, Gabriel. Hunter was still at work, but Ellie kept us entertained. After about an hour or so, though, I wanted to go and check on Mr. Morris. Ellie volunteered to drop Raven off after Hunter got back from work, so I went back to the house alone. Mr. Morris was waiting for me in the yard. I scratched him behind his ears, and we both went inside. Curious, and with no time to kill, I set my eyes on the computer again. Sure, I was retired, but I still felt a sort of personal obligation to figure this out. I had sworn to myself long ago that I would be the one to catch this sicko. I searched Tatiana Graves' name. When her image popped up, I groaned, shaking my head. She bore a damn good resemblance to Patricia, as did all of the others who had vanished before her. It hurt to look at her for too long. I scrolled down to read more info about her disappearance. She was 21. Having graduated from the school that my wife taught at 3 years ago. Besides that, nothing else was really known about her. There was nothing said about her hobbies or occupation. I scrolled down to the comment section, wondering if anyone might post anything more in depth. The first comment I saw read, "Whore, she got what she deserved." Shaking my head, I proceeded with the next two, which consisted of wishes and prayers for her family. The comment after that was by another woman who mentioned her getting around. Either these women were horrible, horrible trolls, or Tatiana had built a sort of reputation for herself. I was done with this regardless. It was time for a walk. The air was as frigid as I wanted to be towards Eric the next time I saw his sorry ass. I trudged along behind Mr. Morris, who stopped to pee on every tree before we came to the pond again. I remember the strange movement that I'd seen earlier that day and decided to investigate. I made my way to the other side of the pond, which was, quite honestly, a rarity. I intended to look for footprints, but the light snow had already melted. Still, I investigated the area and came to a quick conclusion. Someone had most definitely been here. A piece of black plastic, as though from a trash bag, had caught onto a hanging branch. It hadn't faded in the sun, nor was it dirty from prolonged exposure. I reached up and fingered it curiously, then looked around. Mr. Morris was lying on the ground, chewing on something. "Hey, spit it out, you scoundrel." Mr. Morris looked up at me guiltily. I could see something gold glinting in his mouth. I knelt down and pulled it out, staring at it in disbelief. It was a bracelet. What the? I'd never seen it before. Raven definitely didn't own one like it. I investigated the area further, but found nothing else out of the ordinary. I decided to head further out into the property. If someone was trespassing here, they had chosen the wrong day to do it. I had my pistol in a holster on my waist, as per usual. I kept one hand on it as Mr. Morris and I pressed on. I hadn't been on this side of the pond in a while. The area was heavily wooded, and I honestly had no reason to ever come this far. My son, Hunter, however, was another story. When he was going through his pyromania phase, he'd been out here burning whatever he could get his hands on a regular basis. In the days before that, we'd built him a treehouse on a tree that he had picked out when he was 6 years old. That same old treehouse was still somehow in one piece, though the rickety ladder that he had once used was another story entirely. I paused, my breath rising in front of me as I surveyed the scene before me. There was an indent in the grass and soil down below, indicating that the old ladder had been laying on the ground for quite some time recently. Now, however, it was leaned up against the tree, leading up to the treehouse. I could feel a chill that had nothing to do with the cold. I looked down at the bracelet, then up at the treehouse. Someone had recently climbed up there, and I suspected they were still there. Mr. Morris sat and watched me as I slowly approached the ladder. I put one hand on it, staring up at the old wooden treehouse. "My name is Dario Vincent, and if anyone is up there, you have trespassed on my property. Come out now and I won't get the proper authorities involved." Silence. The wind blew, fluttering my jacket and hood. I kept my eyes on the little windows of the treehouse, searching for any movement. Nothing. "Okay, if you're not going to come out, I'll have to come up and get you myself." I put one foot on the ladder, which gave a sudden shake. I should have known I was going to regret the cheeseburger from the other day. I began slowly ascending the ladder, which quivered perilously with every rung I reached. I held the bracelet tight in my hand as I climbed, determined to get to the bottom of this. There was a good chance that whoever was in the treehouse was part of this whole thing. A foul, terrible, familiar stench suddenly wafted into my nostrils. I paused, now nearly at the top of the ladder. No way. There couldn't be a... I put a hand on the top rung. The sound of a gunshot exploded nearby, more terrible than thunder in the heaviest storm. Startled, I lost any balance that I had on the ancient ladder and felt myself toppling over. The world was suddenly upside down. And then, It was gone entirely. I was in pain, a lot of pain. My head felt like it had split open, and I knew that my radius was fractured. I groaned as I laid there in the cold grass, forgetting momentarily why I was lying there. Then I opened my eyes. Hunter was leaning over me, an old dirty red cap on his head, his brown eyes wide. "Hey, Pa, you okay?" "Ugh, I don't think so. Help me stand up, son." I offered him my non-fractured arm, and he pulled me to my feet. "What the hell just happened?" "You're up on the ladder, so I guess you didn't see it. There was a cougar sneaking up on Mr. Morris. I tried to kill it, but missed my shot." I glanced down at Mr. Morris, whose chocolate eyes were fixed on me. "How'd you find us?" "I heard you yelling. I was wondering who you were talking to." "The treehouse, Hunter. We have to get to the tree." "Pa, you have blood running down your face. Let's get you to the doctor. What are you so interested in up there anyway?" I glanced back up at the wooden house that I'd built so many years ago. "I'll tell you later." It was during the drive to the doctor's office that I realized my cell phone was missing. Had it fallen out of my pocket by the treehouse? "Hey, buddy. Do you remember seeing my phone in the grass back there?" Hunter kept his eyes on the road as he drove. "Nah, Pa, I don't think so. Why, is it missing?" "Yeah, you have yours?" He shook his head. "Left it back at my house. We can call Ma and Ellie from the doctor's office." It wasn't Raven who I was intending to call. We returned a couple of hours later. I was stitched up and wore a sling in my left arm. Hunter dropped me off at home, where I knew I was going to be in trouble. "What the hell is the matter with you? You could have at least told me you were leaving. Ellie and I were worried sick." "Yeah, darling, I'm sorry. I was losing a lot of blood, apparently, and Hunt didn't want to take any chances." "What were you doing out there, anyway? How'd you hurt yourself?" It's horrible to admit this, but I couldn't trust anyone. The corpse was on my property. That meant any of my family members could have been involved. So, I lied. "There was some still snow melting out there. I slipped and fell down one of them damn slopes. I'm just glad Hunt was out there to help me out. I just think that I left my phone out there. I'm gonna go back and grab it." Raven surveyed me from her spot in the kitchen, a book lying open in front of her. "Okay, be careful, old man." I couldn't climb the ladder with a fractured bone, so I fully intended to call Eric to send a couple officers out to discover the corpse for me. I hadn't gotten far before the smell of smoke reached my nostrils. Oh no. I ran the rest of the way to the treehouse, and my suspicions were confirmed. It had been set ablaze. Black smoke rose from the burning tree, and heat emanated from it, making me forget about the cold. I collapsed to my knees, staring in despair. The killer knew how close I'd been to finding the body. I was now in danger myself. I noticed my phone, which was lying near the spot where I'd landed. I crawled over to it to make the call. "Eric, Eric, I need you to get over to my house as soon as you can." After the firefighters doused the flames, the investigation work started. The charred remains of a human had indeed been found. Eric told me he would do some more investigating on our property, but also that I needed to be careful. I remember his eyes flickering over Raven during most of our conversation. Raven was completely distressed. She insisted that we sleep over at Hunter's, wanting the family to all be together. I sent her on her way, promising to meet her there. I told her that I wanted to speak with Eric more. In reality, however, I wanted to do some investigating of my own. I went through Raven's drawer, closet, and every other area of the house that I could. It wasn't until I dropped an old photo album of hers that I noticed something odd. The album had flipped open, and I could see a photo that we had taken together as a family. Hunter, still a teenager, was already taller than the rest of us. Raven stood next to her sister, Amber, the two of them grinning. Amber's daughter, my precious Patricia, was standing between Amber and I, and her arm around my shoulder. But I could no longer see her face. Someone had used a cutting device of some sort to crudely scratch it up, rendering her unidentifiable. I flipped to the next page and found that the same had been done on another picture of Patricia. Every single photo of her had been vandalized. What the hell? I closed the album and put it back where I'd found it. This was going to raise my blood pressure. I didn't want to believe that my family was really a part of this, but at this point, it was obvious that something was off. I went to check Hunter's old room, and upon inspecting his closet, I cried out and fell on my ass, pushing myself backwards. Mr. Morris dashed into the room to check on me, but my eyes were on the old mason jar that I had just discovered. It was full of human teeth. I heard the creak of the back door in the other room. Oh no. I leapt up and slammed the closet door. I tried to hurry out of the room. In my haste, I tripped and fell, and the pain in my arm flared up. I could hear the slow footsteps of someone approaching down the hall. I reached down and pulled my gun from the holster. Pa, what are you doing? Hunter had appeared in the doorway. He stared in confusion from me to the gun in my hand, to Mr. Morris, and finally to the closet. Oh, hey bud, Mr. Morris nudged his way in here, and I came to grab him. It's kind of dusty, so I lost my footing and my gun fell out. I was just picking it up. Okay. Come on, we're all waiting for you. It's safe to say, I didn't get much sleep that night. What little sleep did come to me only resulted in nightmares. I would hear the creaking of the door, the agonized wailing of a woman being tormented, and a sweet voice as she moaned my name. Dario! Dario! Raven was already off to work when I woke the next morning. I took Mr. Morris on a walk and returned to my house. I should have called Eric about the teeth, I know, but I've already said it before. This case is personal, and I had a promise to keep for myself. I knew that the investigation of the property would soon extend to my own home, so I had to work quickly. I made my way back to Hunter's old room and quickly inspected the closet. I felt my soul drop out of my body. The teeth were gone. I went back over to the place where the photo album had been stashed and discovered that it too was gone. One thing, however, had been left behind. Whoever had been in the house must have been in a hurry and forgot it lying on the bed. A little black book that looked to be a diary. I picked it up and thumbed through it. This had most definitely belonged to Hunter when he was growing up. He had drawn pictures, wrote stories, and just discussed little things like his old man teaching him how to shoot or swimming in the lake with his cousin Patricia. Then, I got to the last page. Scribbled on it, in red marker, was one word. Sugar pie. I took advantage of the time alone and whipped out the old map that focused on the locations that each of the girls had last been seen in. Karen Whittaker had told her roommate that she was going to work, which happened to be a strip club down the street from where they lived. Karen had been known to walk to work, it was so close. Her abductor could have easily learned the typical path she took to get to work. Julia Voss had been on a date with her boyfriend the night she went missing. We'd interrogated him pretty harshly, but it was evident that the guy wasn't to blame. Julia too had been out alone late at night, possibly doing some last minute shopping before being offered a ride from the abductor. Jamie Calloway had actually vanished in broad daylight, having last been seen at a community college. Nia Justice, whose mandible had been found in a field later on, had been taken after a friend's birthday party. Felicia Smith had gotten into an argument with a friend at a bonfire and stormed off drunk, never to be seen again. Sweet Patricia, my sugar pie, had last been seen by, well, according to the investigation, her mother, Amber, who she had visited on that fateful evening. that brought me to the two new girls. The abductor had taken Denise Lawson as, again, she walked home from work. And I don't know all the details about Tatiana Graves yet, but apparently she had had drinks with my wife on the night that she disappeared. I studied the map intently, and with my family in mind, made a discovery that had flown right over my head before. The strip club, restaurant, community college, apartment the party had taken place at, the site of the bonfire, and the bar had each been within 5 miles of the school that Raven taught at. 3 of the 8 girls had graduated from that same school. At least 2 of them had unsavory reputations, Karen, the stripper, and Tatiana, who had apparently been getting around. The only other thing all these girls had in common was their unremarkable resemblance to each other. Whoever the abductor had been, he was either incredibly persuasive or didn't work alone. It was, however, unlikely that these girls would take rides offered to them by strange men. A woman, however, would seem more friendly and trustworthy, especially if she happened to be a well-known local teacher. I took a swig of the bourbon that I had retrieved from my hidden stash. I had been sober for about 8 years now, or at least that's what my wife thought. I took 2 more big gulps before sitting back, staring at the map of the city before me. I found myself thinking about Hunter's diary, the word that he had scribbled. Hunter had been attending the high school that his mother taught at 10 years ago. He was a junior when Patricia had first gone missing, and there was no way he knew that name. No way anyone could have known that name. There was the incident in the woods with the gunshot that had nearly caused me to break my neck. Why hadn't he just straight up shot me, you say? Well, it's easier to explain away an accident than it is 2 members of your family going missing, especially with one of them being your father. Hunter would know that Eric and the full force would be all over him if he had been foolish enough to try get rid of me. He had seen me climbing the ladder to get to the treehouse. But when had the fire started? Had Raven set the treehouse ablaze just before I arrived back home? Had Hunter tipped her off? Or did she just suspect that I'd gotten hurt climbing the old ladder? The ladder which had been left lying on the ground after I'd fallen? I took another swig and grimaced. Speaking of the ladder, there was no way in hell anyone would have been able to haul a dead body up it. The victim, most likely Denise Lawson, would have to be taken to the treehouse alive, perhaps ordered by gunpoint to climb the ladder and into it. For what reason? I found myself thinking of the teeth and felt sick. The abductor was likely torturing these girls brutally before slaying them. Eric had only recovered 1 corpse from the burnt treehouse, but the other girls had been dead for a decade now. Their murderer could have easily dispatched their bodies by now. And then there was the black trash bag. The back door creaked. "Pa? Hey, it's me and Elle. We came to keep you some company." I didn't respond. I'd come to my conclusion. The diary was the MO. It all made sense now. I'd been suspecting Raven, but no. This all came down to one person, my son. He was the one who had taken my sugar pie away from me. Hunter's head popped around the doorway. "I bought crab legs and..." He trailed off, his eyes going from the map to the bottle of whiskey. "Pa, I thought you quit drinking a long time ago." My eyes were watering. "Hunter, how about you and me go for a walk, hmm? I need to talk to you about something." I could hear Ellie making Gabriel laugh in the living room. Hunter looked worried, but he shrugged. "Okay, Pa." I looked him over and took note that he wasn't carrying his gun. Good. I took 1 more drink from the bottle before standing up and walking up to him. I clapped him lovingly on the back of his neck and rubbed his back. I led him to the back door, and Ellie looked up from playing with Gabriel. "Everything okay?" "Yeah, Ellie, we'll be back," I replied, and shut the door behind me. There was a light snow falling, and the air was crisp. The tension between my son and I was clear, and not even the presence of Mr. Morris trotting along ahead of us was enough to soothe either of us. We walked in silence for a bit, eventually coming to the police markers that prohibited us from moving any further. No one was out here, however, so we trotted on. After a few more painful minutes, Hunter finally gathered the courage to speak. "You okay, Pa?" "Oh yeah, I'm just fine, son. Good land we got, hmm? Your mother and I moved out here about 30 years ago. If anything, this place was a bargain. I love her just as much as I did back then. There's nothing I wouldn't do for her, or for you. You know that, right?" Hunter was staring down at the snow as we crunched through it. "Of course, Pa. What are you getting at? You want to tell me something?" "The son of a... he had the audacity..." "No, Hunt. I think it's you who has something to say. Speak up now, boy." I had my hand on my pistol now. Hunter saw this and came to a stop, his brown eyes wide and bewildered, his breath rising up from in front of him. "Pa, I don't know what you're talking about. What the hell is going on right now?" My cell phone began to ring. I answered it without taking my eyes off of Hunter. "This is Dario." "Hey, Dario." It was Eric. "I wanted to give you a heads up. A friend to a friend. Please don't make me regret it. I have 3 squad cars en route to your house. In addition to the remains in the treehouse, we retrieved a mutilated corpse in a trash bag from the pond. It was Tatiana, Dario. We're gonna have to bring you all in. Raven, Hunt, Ellie. I know you're the one who kickstarted the investigation, but you have to come too. You know the protocol." "Thanks, Eric, but come fast. I suspect my son might attempt to kill me in the next few minutes." "What?" I hung up. Hunter had turned as white as the snow around him. "Pa, why did you say that?" I shrugged. "It was strategic. This way, I can claim self-defense when the judge asks why I shot you." Mr. Morris sat watching us from a few feet away, his head tilted. "Pa, what the hell are you talking about? Why would you shoot me? This is crazy. Let's just go back to the house." "I won't have to shoot you as long as you admit to it. Even though I want to, I won't do it. Even after what you did to her." Hunter was shaking, though whether it was from the cold or absolute fear, I did not know. "To who?" "I saw your diary, Hunt. Sugar pie." Hunter's shock shone through, clear as day on his face. He clenched his fists. "Pa, don't lie to me, Hunter. You know." Hunter glanced down at the ground, his own eyes tearing up now. "Of course I do, Pa. I would wake up from the damn creak of the back door every time." He looked me in the eyes. "You would wait until Mom was off visiting Grandma, or with her friends, or working that second job she had at the time of the weekend. I could have forgiven you if it had been a random whore off the street, or if it had been a different woman each time. It could have been any woman in the world, but you chose Patricia, your wife's niece." My grip tightened on my pistol, still in the holster. "Watch your tone with me, boy. I've already told you I can shoot you at any moment. I didn't choose Patricia. We found each other. She'd been down in the dumps. She'd even considered taking her own life. Your mother herself was withdrawing from me. I don't know if it was the long hours on the job or her coping with her father's death, but I was lonely. Patricia reached out to me. I believed we saved each other." Hunter looked repulsed. "I don't want to hear it. I heard enough of it back then. The bed slamming against the wall. You calling her that disgusting ass name. Did you really think I wouldn't hear you? It's a wonder Mom never walked in on you." "Don't detract, Hunt. Whatever you thought of Patricia, you did not need to kill her. Nor any of those other girls." Mr. Morris let out a long, low howl of discomfort. Hunter looked incredulous. "Is that what this is about? Pa, I love you, but I never forgave you. I will never forgive you for what you did to Patricia and to Ma. But murder? Who do you think I am?" I whipped my gun out of the holster. "Don't lie to me. The teeth, the diary." "What teeth? And despite what I saw, I never wrote about you and her. Hearing it was bad enough. Why would I put it into words?" I heard Raven's far-off voice in the distance. "Dario? Dario, what are you doing? Her yelling made me momentarily spin around. That gave Hunter enough time to charge me. He tackled me, and we both went down to the ground. He was bigger and stronger than me, and I was fighting with one arm. But I was possessed with a fury greater than any in hell. My own son had been the one who had taken a life, and the lives of the other girls, simply because they resembled her. And all while living under my roof. He was truly a psychopath. My burning desire for justice kept my grip tight on the Glock, but Hunter was persistent. Mr. Morris was going crazy, as was my wife, who was running over towards us. Then, the gun went off. Hunter was still atop of me. His eyes widened, as did mine. I could feel a heavy, warm wetness down around my midsection. Hunter stared at me in shock, then muttered, "Pa?" He toppled over off of me as his mother screamed. I pushed myself up, looking at the gunshot wound in my son's gut. Despite everything, the sight of my baby boy bleeding out rendered me speechless. I looked at my gun in absolute disgust and hurled it across the way. I then pushed my hand down on the wound, applying pressure. "Hunter, son, I'm so sorry." Raven finally made it over to us and fell to her knees beside our boy as well. Hunter was bleeding from his mouth now. He looked up at us, gave a shudder, and then he was gone. Mr. Morris continued barking, and Raven and I remained there with our son until Barry and the other officers arrived. Next came a long interviewing process. I told Eric that Hunter had been watching me after I discovered the first corpse in the treehouse. I told him about the teeth, the diary, and the photo album. When asked why he may have wanted to kill his own cousin 10 years previously, I must admit, I'm a coward, and I didn't own up to my own sins. I didn't tell him I had an affair with Patricia. My wife had just lost a son. Why would I lay that heavy burden on her now? I instead told Eric that Hunter may have been jealous of the attention that I showered on his cousin, making him ride the bus to school while I hadn't hesitated in helping her buy a car and so forth. Eric expressed his sorrows for the devastating loss that my family had just suffered, our second in 10 years. When Raven, Ellie and I left the station, we were numb. Raven offered to spend the night at a hotel with Ellie, who wasn't ready to go back to the house. Gabriel had been left to spend the night with Ellie's mother. I didn't want to leave Mr. Morris alone, so I told them I'd be going back to the house to sit and prepare for the ramifications of the day's events. Ellie went up to the hotel room, but Raven stayed with me at the truck. "Dario, I don't know what to say. I don't blame you. If what you say is true, then Hunter... Oh, I wish he was still here. But you had to defend yourself. Don't talk about it. I know it'll be hard to try not to think about either. We'll be okay. It's going to be rough for the next few months, but we'll make it. Don't love our son any less than you did before. Nobody is perfect." Raven met my eyes and gave me a sad smile. "I love you. I love you." We kissed and she stepped back, looking down at the ground. The snow drifted softly around her. "All right, drive carefully. I'll see you tomorrow, sugar pie." She turned to walk away, and I stared dumbly at the back of her head. "Wait, honey, what was that?" Raven stopped and turned back. "Huh? Oh, I said I'll see you tomorrow." We stared at each other for a few seconds, and then she turned and walked away. I sat there in the truck for a long time after that. The world is truly a messed up place.